Speaking of, who's it? J.D. Piquel on three.
What an intro.
Yeah.
Let's go.
The best looking guy in college football. Huh?
Dang, man. That's high praise.
No,
that
seriously.
That's lofty company.
They rolled out that lunch, you know, and I was like, oh, man, I'm getting this fried chicken. And I was a little of this mac and cheese. I go sit down, and there's J.D. sitting over. I was like, maybe I should have got the salad.
I didn't touch the salad. I went, got double mac and cheese, couple of chicken. Like, it was probably, I don't know how y'all feel. I think that's the best Media Days lunch I've been a part of.
Oh, dude, it was.
Personally, I thought it was fantastic. Top tier. No knock on Dallas or Nashville, but like that was the varsity.
Hall of Fame caliber.
That was the varsity, yeah.
And the little tarts, I don't know what that was, but man, they were delicious. So,
all right, swinging a hot bat. Swinging a hot bat today.
Mike's like, don't get them on food here. Oh, shit. Hey, I wanted to ask you. You're all over the place. Last year, fantastic season. I mean, you cover all sports, but I'm curious, which was your favorite game? Which was the ones you went to, which one really stood out to you?
Man, so we didn't get to get out on the road too much a year ago just because y'all could attest, so much of it is on Sunday and we wanted to be in the studio, but in terms of just the games that we got to see a year ago, my answer this time, or not this time, last year, my answer at the national title game was Oregon-Ohio State round one was just, those two teams were, you know, everyone kind of saw the crash course of them being in some way, shape, or form factoring into the national title picture, which ended up being the way it went when Ohio State did what they did in the Rose Bowl. But that game was, to me, that was like my first answer. But then right after I gave that answer to someone else we were speaking to, our producer, Caden Smith, is like, you left out Georgia-Bama. I was like, man, yeah, that might have been, that might be like 1A and 1B. Like those two games were just electric. So I've been as anti-realignment as anybody.
Yeah.
But then at the exact same time, you look at just the banger slate we have this year. Those two games I just mentioned are product of realignment. So those are my, if I can say two, I would say Georgia-Alabama and Oregon-Ohio State.
That Georgia-Bama game, and it's kind of funny. We get caught up in the season and how the end of the season went. It's almost like you forget early 24. Like, that was the one when we were at Media Days, everybody couldn't wait to see.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a great game. It was, hell, if there would have been 5 minutes left in that thing, I don't know who would have won.
Isn't it funny how that goes? Like, this time of year, our opinions and how they evolve from what's actually true. Like, this time last year, I had Florida State in my playoff. I was like, expanding to 12 teams. Hey, they just missed the 4-team playoff. You can't triple that field. They can't make it in and then win 2 football games. So here we are.
It's wild how quickly it can change, though, isn't it?
And drop of a dime.
That's why I'm looking at programs like Florida, programs like Oklahoma that were struggling. I mean, a couple games in the last season, and now I'm not necessarily saying Oklahoma and Florida are making the college football playoff, but I wouldn't be stunned if either or both made it if things broke right this year. You know what?
If it broke right at 9-3, they could get in.
Right.
You know, which is a crazy thought. And again, I'm with you. I wouldn't like predict that necessarily. I won't predict that this time of year. But if you're talking about what could happen with their schedule, who they have at quarterback, those rosters, like you don't have to squint too hard to see one of those teams. If a John Mateer plays at a Heisman level, what's Oklahoma? You know, are they a 10-2 team and gets in the playoff with that schedule? Like, absolutely, a 10-2. Yeah.
What do you think I mean, obviously, SEC was pissed off and rightfully so. I felt like at the end of the year when we're looking at the college football selections for the playoffs, do we have a shift? Is there a hard talking to that's going on maybe right now that says, hey, if we get to a 9-3 SEC team, we got to get these guys in, especially if they're playing as hot as like a South Carolina was last year.
It's a really interesting question that I don't know we're going to get to the end of that conversation, because as we evolve in this expanded playoff, we're talking about all these automatic bids for the Big 12, the Big 10, the SEC. And then so you start to do the math. You're like, well, if we go to 16 and you have, what is it, 3 potential at-large bids, and one of those is already going to Notre Dame, so the committee's deciding on, what, 2 spots? Like, at that point, a 9-3 team is more than likely in a 16-team playoff or a 14-team playoff. And so to answer your question more directly, though, I think and it's why we're not going to 9 games in the SEC until they get their, you know, without a shadow of a doubt out of the way and they get all their guarantees, because they're like, we are, as a, whether it's right or wrong, as a society, we are not able to determine a 9-3 versus 10-2 and how those things could look different. Like, we see the number in the loss column and the number in the win column. We say, well, therefore, that team is better than that team. And it's like, well, you're not wrong for placing an emphasis on that. And the whole the games have to matter crowd, I'm right there with you. But we have to understand, like, when you play a different schedule than someone else and you see the entire, what was it, like half the first round was from this conference, it's like, yes, I understand that there's a certain amount of lean towards the SEC for some folks, and that's fine, that's whatever, but we'd be kidding ourselves if we didn't look at what the draft says about the talent in this conference.
Yeah, didn't Indiana just drop off a few for Austin Peay?
Let's not talk about that trash program on here. I know JD respects them, but we don't. So let's talk SEC. Which team you think at an event like this Media Days is not getting discussed enough that, again, not that you're like guaranteeing they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of flaws with Texas, Georgia, Alabama. I think those are the perceived favorites. And they should be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one or two of those could drop. Who's someone that's not getting enough discussion that deserves it?
There's two teams that come to mind. One is South Carolina, just because it's a conference where we have tons of new quarterbacks across the board. And I'm looking at South Carolina, and I'm like, man, I think at the end of this thing, Lenora Sellers could be the best conference or the best quarterback in the whole conference. And if you're telling me he's going to be the best quarterback in the SEC, I know South Carolina's roster is not up there with the Georgias and the Texases, but like, how much does that dude close the gap for you any given Saturday? So South Carolina definitely, I think, needs some discussion. And then and Oklahoma, like we just talked about them a second ago. I don't know if it's the flow. I don't know if it's the headband. I don't know if it's just like the way the dude plays the game that kind of gets
related?
Me fired up. No, we're not related. Hopefully we get to talk to him. We can, you know, talk. We can swap some 23andMe's. But just the way the dude plays the game, I love it. I think Oklahoma, like if it's Brent Venables as the head coach, defense should be okay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've got an offensive coordinator that worked well with the quarterback. You got good weapons. Like, it can't be as bad as last year. So I think Oklahoma could be, at the very least, an absolute pain to play in the month of November.
Which team are we hyping up too high? Which one are you look at and you say, hey, it makes sense. I see why people are high on these guys, but I'm worried about this is a team that could fall if this happens.
I really like Florida. I really like DJ Lagway. I need to see a little more. And so it's tough because I project him to the future, and you're like, dude, at the end of last year, he was awesome, arguably the best quarterback in the conference at the end of last year for that, like, 2-3-game stretch that he had just in terms of, like, actually things he did. Then you take a step back, and you're like, well, turnovers got to cut down on those. Do need some receivers to step up. And I feel great about the receiver room, but there's a lot of, like, projection for Florida for me, and also the back of my mind is saying, well, how healthy is DJ Lagway? I'm also worried about that. So there's a couple of factors where I want to see a larger sample size from Florida before we say they're going to be a college football playoff team. And I think they'll be good. I think they'll be in that mix, but I need to see more from them.
What's your thoughts on A&M? Because I feel like a lot of people, there's a lot going on there. They're Texas 8-4, I like to call them.
I know you do. I know you like to
fire off. Should, you know, the past behavior, we should not put on Mike Elko's program. Oh, we could totally put last year on him.
Sure.
Because he was in charge. But it wasn't that long ago. They were 7-1. They were number one in the SEC. Marcel Reed, I think he is criminally underrated. You know, you just talked about DJ Lagway, and a lot of A&M fans said, well, why don't we say the same things about Marcel Reed? Well, it's probably because Florida got hot and A&M got cold at the end.
Yeah.
But very similar. I mean, Marcel Reed could be that guy this year. What's your read on A&M? And you don't have to pick him for the playoff, but I'm just letting you know I am.
Wow, you're picking them for the playoff.
Yeah.
A&M, Texas 8-4, you got them in the playoff.
This year, yeah.
I love it. I'm right there with
one
you.
One Texag
radio I'm right
show
there with you, man. We haven't settled on our official playoff field just yet, but I keep on coming back to A&M, and I'm like, dude, there's so many things that add up to where I'm like, outside of the logo, I have a hard time not thinking they're going to be there at the very end of this thing,
right,
when it comes to the playoff field, you know, because I think one thing we overlook with them is Le'Veon Moss and the factor he was for them when he was healthy. Like, if he stays healthy, I don't know if they don't make the playoff a year ago. Because I don't think they probably slip up the way they did at the end. You have support from Marcel Reed. Like, he's a walking first down every two touches, like 6 yards a carry. So I know he's been in the news, and I know there's still some things to be sorted out there, and that's not me speaking to that situation, but just as a football player, when he was available last year, different football team. So just to what you said, the previous, I guess, jokes about A&M that we've all made and that are honestly kind of fair to make to some extent.
Right.
I don't think Mike Elko lives with those. Last thing I'll say, Marcel Reed, what he did in that game against Florida, where they tell him that morning, hey, by the way, Connor Webbing's not going. Marcel, you're the guy. I mean, didn't he just look like a, like he was out there playing pickup football. And it's like, this is the swamp. This is a big spot for you. It's a gross game. Just like psychopath behavior. Didn't even seem phased at all. That told me a lot about that cat.
A lot of great games. We're talking about all the wonderful matchups that we're going to get to see this season, but you can't overlook week one. And I feel like we got some monumental games week one. Bama, Florida State. I think, let me ask you this one. Which one do you think is more important for that coach? Coach Kelly coming out here talking about the 1-0, beating Baylor, your Baylor, or do you think it would be
Clemson?
LSU and Clemson, or Baylor and Auburn.
Very fair.
You know, which one do you think is most important for that coach?
I think it's more important for LSU, because I think when we look at what their aspirations are, and they've made it very clear, they're like, we want to win a national championship. And I'm like, love that. Say it before you see it, or see it and then say it so everyone else can eventually see it. Like, just putting it out there, I love that. But if they can't beat Clemson, it's not so much a your season's over, because they could win the rest, win the SEC, whatever. It's all right there in front of them. But I would be concerned about how they match up on the line of scrimmage and what that would mean for them the rest of the way when they play the Alabamas, the A&Ms, and things of that nature. So I think the sample size there is more important. If Auburn drops the first game to Baylor, Baylor could be I know there's the homer factor here for me. Baylor could be that team from the Big 12 that shows up in the playoff. And I think also Auburn, like, if they win 8 games this year, you probably check the box for satisfaction, which I think is doable. So I think for LSU, it's like, hey, man, this is the year now, BK. You got your quarterback back. Nobody else has their quarterback back. Like, let's get this thing going.
Well, you talk about, you know, putting it out there, believing in yourself. I think when we exit media days, we're going to say no one believes in themselves more than Vanderbilt. They bring back more than anybody on the offensive and defensive side of the football in the conference. Now, I'm not saying they're going to make a playoff or anything, but, I mean, that's a feisty team, and I think they're going to be better than they were last year. What's your take on that?
I think that's very fair. I don't know if they'll have, like, that Alabama win under their belt, but isn't Diego Pavia just, like, exactly what they needed? You know what I mean? Like, wasn't Vanderbilt? Vanderbilt was the punchline of this whole thing for how many years in a row? And you got a dude walking around out here saying, I want to win the Heisman. I came back for a national championship. And you're like, for real? Like, that's how you feel about it? And whether it's bravado or whether he actually means it, I actually don't care. I think it's exactly what Vanderbilt needs and has needed. And I love that he's back in college football. So to answer your question, I think as an overall product, like, they will be more feisty. Another year for him in the system, you would like to think will elevate his play. He also said last year, too, he was kind of dinged up post-Kentucky, which I thought was interesting. And a full year of healthy Diego Pavia could be great.
I believe he was number 3 in the SEC in rushing attempts. They got to curb that.
Workhorse.
He's a little small. Again, he's a beast, but I don't think you can ask him to do that 2 years in a row.
I don't think anybody should ask their quarterback to be that many. You know, like, rushing attempts is like they were an academy out here in Nashville, essentially, what they were doing, man. How about Eli Stowers? Let's get him the rock a little bit more. Let him cook. It's fun that we're – I think some of this probably is NIL and the transfer portal, obviously the transfer portal with Stowers and Pavia and how it's benefited them. But it's just – it's fun we're talking about how Vandy could factor into this whole thing, and them being sneaky is I don't know. I think it's – I hate to say the words like things being good for college football, because college football I think is just always good. But it's a fun storyline, fun to track, and I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I love the buzz. I mean, somebody posted, when's the last time – that we saw, it was Vanderbilt, Pavia sitting up there, and there are just droves of people around that table to listen to what he said. I mean, when's the last time we've had anybody from Vanderbilt? You know, I think it's good. I think it's good for SEC, because, you know, we're getting to that parity point. And it wasn't that long ago Pavia went out there and talked about the NIL and how they're going to be leading the country, and whether that's true or not. But, again, you say it, you speak it, you're setting the foundation. So I told Mike it would not blow my mind in 5 years Vanderbilt is one of the top programs in this conference.
You would think that they almost, like, doing the math on it, maybe, like, should be. I know the academic standards is one thing, but, like, Notre Dame's got academic standards. They're pretty good. Like, Stanford had academic standards when Jim Harbaugh was there. They won a lot of football games. And so it's like, man, if they're going to swing a big bat on the NIL side of things, you got Nashville. Like, I know I know we're all from Nashville here, I guess metaphorically speaking, from the where we live right now. Like, it's a probably easy place to recruit to, I would have to think, if you're, like, a college kid. Like, hey, you want to come hang out in one of the biggest, you know, parties of a place in what Nashville is? Like, I don't know. I think there's a lot there.
Well, I'm stunned we've talked this much Vanderbilt without Shane interjecting Tennessee. So I want to ask you about the Vols. What are they looking like? Because I'm getting a lot of mixed. I mean, everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, but most assume they'll take a step back.
Sure.
But because they made the playoff and who they're losing. But I think that really discredits Josh Heupel and the program he's built. I still think the defense is going to be really good. They've got a ton of unknowns on offense, but they got a lot of potential on that side of the football too. What do you make of the Vols this year?
I think Josh Heupel just kind of makes it work, right? I mean, from Hendon Hooker to Joe Milton to Nico, we've seen him kind of adapt the way that he calls the game. We've seen him adapt his roster.
Yeah.
We were sitting here in 2022 just like, dog, if they get a stop on third down, Tennessee's a playoff team, you know, with Hendon Hooker scoring 40, whatever it is a game. So with that being like the track record, I have a hard time looking at Tennessee in the future and saying, no, they lost Nico, they lost Dylan Sampson, lost Cooper Mays, they're cooked. And I'm like, at this time in 2022, 2021, no one was talking about what Jalen Hyatt was going to be for Tennessee. So I do think the way they've added talent, whether it be via the portal or on the recruiting trail, I think that's going to start to show itself more this year and have his thumbprints all over this roster. And I don't know if they're a playoff team, but I do think you talk about what Joey Aguilar can be and, you know, the range as to what he could bring to the table. And if he's like a, let's call it a 25 touchdown guy, five picks, does something for you on the ground, they'll be in that mix. I think they're definitely going to be in the mix.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen this, but I've got Bama winning the SEC.
Okay.
Think that's a crazy take, or could you see that happening?
I don't think it's crazy at all. Who's the quarterback in that scenario in your mind? Is that Ty Simpson?
Doesn't even matter.
Probably
Ty Simpson.
That's fair. No, I mean, I think it's not a crazy take. It's just, it's so dependent on that guy at quarterback. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I think in that scenario that you're speaking to, would we all be wildly surprised if Kalen DeBoer in this quarterback room had a guy that could make it work? Like, I don't think so.
And I think now more than ever, it's much easier for a freshman to come in and play at a high level. Maybe not week one. I think that'd be foolish with at Florida State. They got Wisconsin, which they should crush Wisconsin. And then their fourth game is at Georgia. I don't think, as good as Russell may be, I think it'd be insane to throw a true freshman at that. But if there is a change, I think it would come after that Georgia game.
Yeah, I guess my concern then would be switching quarterbacks during the year. I don't always necessarily parallel with like them being in Atlanta for an SEC championship, but I mean, Alabama had trouble at quarterback during the SEC title season for Saban's, you know, final go at things. I think Jalen Miller got benched against USF, so I guess I say that and then give you that example. So all that's to say, this is such a wacky, weird sport.
Yeah.
It would be just like college football. For the second year after Saban's gone, we're talking about could he come back, we're talking about who's Bama got at quarterback, and they play two different guys during the season and win the SEC.
And I mean, Jalen Hurts as a freshman was there.
Yeah.
Then in comes Tua the not long after. I mean, they've had their battles at quarterback and still been very successful.
Let me throw a name at you. Blake Barnett.
Yeah.
Remember that guy? Southern California's finest.
Five-star.
He Santiago was. Canyon, I think it was. Yeah. Yeah. We played him in 7-on-7.
Did you?
I remember that guy.
Did
you
smoke him?
He's good. We beat him. Yeah. We beat him. He couldn't do anything against us, but I mean, good quarterback.
See, we got the real five star.
Yeah. Let me ask. Well, I can't have a Baylor Bear wide receiver on here without asking him who he thinks this year's best wide receiver will be in this conference by the end of the season.
I love so much that you gave me that intro. It's just, it's so lofty. Anybody that goes and like does a Wikipedia or a Google search, like, why'd they give him that title? Best wide receiver. It's hard. It's hard not to say. You said all of college football?
No, or SEC.
Man, it's Auburn. It's Auburn. And I don't know how wide that gap is between them and whoever's in second, but that Auburn room, man, you talk about.
It's loaded.
You just start naming names, you know what I'm saying? Like, anytime we're doing content, we just go through three or four names. It's like, man, I don't know if the audience is like, enjoying me talk about all these different individuals. They probably get the point. They got a lot of receivers. But, I mean, just the fact that we do that exercise with them and Ohio State, it's like, those are the two that come to mind when you talk about all of college football. And after that, we'll see, which I think is why there's so much pressure on a Jackson Arnold and on a Hugh Freeze to access that horsepower. And it's like, dude, we got potentially what, let's say Eric Singleton balls, ends up being a first-round pick. Singleton's a first, or Ken Coleman's a first-round pick. You got two first-round wide receivers, and we're not scoring over 30. Like, what are we doing? You know, so there's a lot there that obviously applies pressure. Auburn, that was my answer, to put a pin in that one, to put that straight to you.
JD, this week we're brought to you by MyBookie. They're paying our way to be here, so we're very grateful. So we are asking everybody for their MyBookie hot take of the season.
Ooh.
Could be any team, any, could be a coaching, could be anything. What do you got, your hottest take for 2025?
Ooh, let's get a little, to get a little spicy. We were talking A&M, right? I think the safest bet for who would lead the SEC in rushing as a team would be Tennessee. Just because they've been a 200 yards on the ground kind of outfit the last 2 years, I'll say A&M leads the SEC in rushing with Marcel Reed, Le'Veon Moss. Should there be everything that works out there again? I know there's off field stuff happening. Reuben Owens and Colin Klein calling the system too. Like,
yeah,
folks, it wasn't that long ago when Colin Klein was playing for Kansas State.
Like, yeah.
So Jake Crane said this. I think it's on the money. Colin Klein is now calling plays for a skill set that he has himself, which I think that kind of part of it,
yeah.
I think that's a massive advantage for him and for Marcel Reed. So I don't know, is that hot enough? You need me to go a little hotter?
I mean, the hotter, the better. Hey, don't forget KC Concepcion. They got him in there, a new toy that'll fit into that offense beautifully. You know what?
It's great. No, I'm all the way here for it.
Yeah, we'll take multiple hots if you got them.
I'm trying to think if there's anything more that – because, I mean, I'm – everything I want to say, I want to make sure I'm like all the way bought into believe. I think LSU's going to win the national championship is how I feel right now. That's how I feel. I'm going to probably go back to the drawing board, work that a little bit more. But like, that's how I feel right now, man. I need someone. This is a better way to say it. I need someone to yank me off the ledge of picking LSU to win the whole thing. I love Nuss. I love the portal. Heck, I love BK. I love the way BK was talking about this yesterday. I'm like, dude, I'm sold. It's talking season and all that. You know, people talk about being easily influenced. I'm easily influenced. I'm sold on LSU at this point.
All right, book it. We got him. We got him. Clip it.
All right, JD, before you go, can you tell our audience how to follow you, how to find your work?
Yeah, man. Well, one, I appreciate that. It's always fun talking with y'all. LSU did such an awesome job, man. But if you want to watch more of our stuff over at the On3 YouTube channel or on the socials at JD Pakel on pretty much everything, you can find us there. But
yeah,
I appreciate y'all having me on,
killing it.
Man.
They got an awesome studio, Shane. Hopefully they'll have me. I don't know if I'm allowed back on the premises, but I have been there. It was a hell of a time, and it's I aspire to be, you know, have a setup like you guys got.
I appreciate that, brother. No, I'm happy my key card works every day.
All right, thank you, brother. Thank you so much.